Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
On February 9th, 2014, Swiss voters will go to the polls, or will have been to the polls, to pass judgment on a highly emotional but equally important and timely issue: limiting the number of foreign migrants to this country. This issue is not only of national importance, because it may also have an impact on Switzerland's bilateral agreements with the European Union. Back in the early 1970s, a Zurich businessman and politician by the name of James Schwarzenbach launched a people's initiative to call for a vote on limiting the number of foreign workers admitted into Switzerland. This resulted in government restrictions that didn't really work in practice. The population at the time was about 6 million, and the thriving Swiss economy was hungry for imported labor, since the native Swiss labor market had completely dried up. So many exceptions had to be made to the new rules that they became virtually ineffective. 45 years later, the total Swiss population has grown to over 8 million and is rising. At nearly 30%, Switzerland has the second largest foreign population of any European country, after Luxembourg. And this does not include the thousands of international civil servants in Geneva, nor the very large number of illegal foreigners in this country, which some estimates put as high as 300,000. And although Switzerland's unemployment rate of 3.2% is peanuts compared to the double-digit figures of some other European countries, there are still a lot of Swiss looking for a job that many see as being taken by foreigners. Another reason for resentment is that especially many blue-collar foreign workers are willing to work for less than normal Swiss wages. In other words, many are being hired as a cost-saving measure, and not because of a shortage of native labor. At the surface, this might be dismissed as yet another case of what some would call Swiss xenophobia. But let us not forget that there are also strong anti-foreign feelings in other European countries, like the UK and Germany, where the foreign populations are less than half of the Swiss figure. Living space in Switzerland is at a premium. In fact, due to its mountainous topography, some 80% of the entire country lives in the relatively small Midlands area, which is rapidly becoming an endless suburb between Bern and Zurich. Incidentally, I discussed this in my letter from Switzerland back in March of 2011. You'll find it in the archive. The only real open spaces left in this country are in the Jura region in the west and Graubünden in the southeast. But these areas are relatively unattractive to most people simply because of the limited employment opportunities there and their comparative isolation. In short, Switzerland is grossly overpopulated, with similar densities to those of Japan or the Netherlands. The growing foreign population in Switzerland is blamed by many as the cause of the ever-rising high cost of accommodation in this country, as well as the worsening congestion on Swiss roads and on public transport. And now comes the cultural aspect of all this. In such a small space, it's becoming nearly impossible to be unaware of the ever-growing number of non-Swiss on the streets, many of whom stand out because of their exotic dress and ethnic background. A big effort is made to help these people learn local Swiss languages and culture, but it's obvious that a large number are not interested in integrating into Swiss society, but are here to seek employment. But there's still another reason why so many Swiss are concerned about the growing foreign population, and that reason is crime. There's nothing xenophobic about the crime statistics, which clearly show that the vast majority of violent and other serious crime in this country is perpetrated by foreigners, who correspondingly account for the majority of those imprisoned in Swiss jails, which have now officially reached the point of being overcrowded. It's well known, for example, that home break-ins and the illicit drug business are the work of non-Swiss. The issue of limiting the number of foreign migrants to Switzerland was once an entirely Swiss matter. But now Switzerland has bilateral agreements with the EU, in which Switzerland, even as a non-EU country, accepts the concept of the free movement of people within the EU. In this respect, Switzerland is a de facto member of the European Union, and many experts think that the country is legally bound to abide by this cornerstone EU concept. As I write this, the outcome of the referendum is unclear. If it's defeated, nothing will change, and the issue will just remain a source of growing discontent among many Swiss, and there will probably be some pressure for the government to do something anyway. If it's accepted, however, it could have wide-ranging consequences on Switzerland's relationship with the European Union, which is this country's main trading partner. Punitive measures against Switzerland would not be out of the question. This is a very difficult issue, which has raised such emotion that even many worldly, liberal-minded Swiss voters say they support tighter restrictions on foreign migration. In any case, Peter Holler will have an analysis of the outcome of the vote in Swiss Political Roundup.
Da kunt die aufwuppen, kunt da vorreiten, kunt da Leben führen, als wir die Herren. Jettiriari, hu jettiriari, jettiriari, hu jettiriari, jettiriari, hu jettiriari, jettiriari.
It's a great pleasure today to be in Switzerland's westernmost city. It's a city which is synonymous with international organizations, with peace conferences, with all kinds of international doings. It is Switzerland's most international place. It is the city of Geneva in western French-speaking Switzerland. Now, Geneva is not only a city, it is also the name of a canton. And in the background here is the jet d'eau, the water jet. That's that famous jet of water which comes up from the Lake of Geneva. It's a beautiful, sunny, warm summer's day. And this is a double pleasure for me because sitting right next to me at Lakeside is Laurie Heber. Laurie and I shared an office together back in Bern when we worked for the international radio there. But Laurie has been in Geneva now for many years, working within the international community. Laurie, how long have you been living in Geneva altogether now?
Well, Bob, let me first of all say bonjour and hello. I think the two languages are appropriate because Geneva is very much an international city, and you're just as likely to hear English here as you are French or any other language for that matter.
Even though it's not an official language, but it is a lingua franca everywhere here.
Absolutely. I mean, most of the meetings that take place, even in the offices that belong to Swiss companies, take place in English because there are so many international speaking people here, and English is the language of choice. But to answer your question, how long have I been here? I've been in Geneva for 6 years, probably almost 7 years. I've lived in the city, I've lived outside the city, and I really feel like Geneva is home now. We're sitting in front of the lake right now, and that, of course, is the symbol of Geneva, with the boats in front of us, as you mentioned before, the jet d'eau on a beautiful sunny day, and this is what makes living in Geneva great.
Now, you work for the World Health Organization, right?
That's right. The World Health Organization is a specialized agency of the United Nations. Many of the international agencies here in Geneva, including the UNHCR, that's the Refugee Commission, the Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. I mean, it's really the whole
International Committee of the Red Cross, the political arm, they're here.
As well. The United Nations Development Program has offices here, UNICEF. It really is the home of humanitarianism.
And as a radio ham and as a broadcaster, I have to have great respect for the International Telecommunication Union, which makes broadcasting worldwide possible and issues licenses and has international treaties using governing the use of broadcasting space. And all of this happens here. I know it's a cliche, but it literally is a very exciting city, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, there are so many different agencies here that people don't even know about. The International Nursing Association, for example, which groups millions of nurses nurses. The Intellectual Property Rights Organization.
World Patents and Copyrights.
Absolutely. They're housed just right down the street from here. So it is a place of power, even though one might not think so sitting on this tranquil little lake today.
I also think of the ICJ, a quiet but extremely important moral force in the rule of law, the International Commission of Jurists. They pass judgment on the legality or illegality of things. It's not an official body, but their opinion carries a lot of weight.
That's right, as well as the United Nations Commission on Human Rights is also based here. And one thing I would have to say about Geneva is that it's not a brash city. There's a lot happening here, but it's quiet, it's contained. It's
very diplomatic, like the people who work here.
It is quite diplomatic, but things actually happen below the surface. So there's a subdued atmosphere a bit to Geneva. It's not high-powered stakes like New York or Washington. Things happen in a rather slow and contained way, but a lot happens.
Now, you live in one of the world's most cosmopolitan international cities, this exciting international life. Just the other day, you got off a plane from Bangkok for an international conference. But your beginnings, you're American. You come from Chicagoland, Indiana, which is pretty down home, isn't it?
Well, that's right. But you'll find that a lot of the people working in international organizations are from places like the Midwest of America, the center of Canada. They're not necessarily from the cosmopolitan parts of the world. And I guess that's probably because they tend to want to go far afield. When you grow up in places like Indiana, which has its merits, somehow New York or California doesn't seem far enough away, I hate to say.
Well, I can't help but recall that famous old classic song, How You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm After They've Seen Gay Paris. Well, that's what happened to you. You studied at the Sorbonne in Paris, and that bug bit you, didn't it?
Absolutely. And my dad still likes to mention how I went to study French for 3 months, and 20 years later, I'm still over here. It happens to a lot of us. There's a huge expatriate community in Geneva, as there is in Paris and other cities, but particularly an American one here. And there's a lot of activities geared particularly for the English-speaking community. Many schools, for example, international schools, but churches, church groups. You know, there's even an Alcoholics Anonymous for Americans in Geneva. And so everything really is geared towards the expat here.
I think of one organization, which is also featured here on Switzerland and Sound under Features. It's the ACA, which is the American Citizens Abroad. It's the advocacy group for the problems, and there are problems facing Americans living abroad. Legal problems, double taxation problems. That's the world headquarters right here. You mentioned the particularly large American community. I can't help also but think of Procter & Gamble. This is the international headquarters of Procter & Gamble here in Geneva. Just one example. Maybe you have others. I don't know.
No, that's right. Procter & Gamble is based here, but there are also many other multinationals. Of course, Nestle is a Swiss company, but many Americans also work there.
And it's just around the bend here on the lake.
That's right. But I have to say that Geneva has done quite a lot of work in trying to make the city and this canton palatable for companies coming in to work here. Of course, Geneva is not known for its low wages or low rent, so there's been other perks that have been put out there, such as lower taxation for multinational corporations.
And the diplomats, the registered diplomats, don't pay tax anyway.
They don't. The United Nations civil servants don't pay taxes, but there are perks. If you're high enough in the UN system, for example, you get special coupons for gasoline. So, I mean,
even though Switzerland's gas is among the cheapest in Europe.
Yeah, but those are the perks. So basically, Geneva is very keen on maintaining its status as an international city for humanitarianism, but also for business. So it's competitive now. It's been having to compete with other cities that want the trade. They basically want to see these international organizations and NGOs, which we haven't really mentioned. There are hundreds and hundreds of NGOs that are based. Those are non-governmental organizations based in Geneva.
These are organizations that have a lot of importance in the world, but do not have official government status. They're private organizations, technically speaking.
They're private organizations. I think in Britain we might call them charities, but basically they are very influential in many parts of the world, particularly in the developing world. And so they play a very important role, for example, in monitoring the activities of the United Nations. And there's scores of them, from faith-based organizations to just private charities. The Aga Khan Foundation is here in Geneva, just down the road. So, and they're doing a huge amount of development work. So
years ago, just to interrupt you for a second, I was in Cameroon in West Africa on a mission with Enfants du Monde, which is the children of the world, literally translated. They do a tremendous amount of charity work to help children in developing parts of the world. There are literally scores of groups and organizations like this headquartered in Geneva.
That's right. And so when you walk down the streets of Geneva, or if you live or work here, often you don't really get a sense of being in Switzerland because the world is very close by. Every person you meet has just stepped off a plane or a train from some exotic part of the world, or they're involved in some activity at the most far-flung reaches of the planet. And so the world seems very close by in Geneva.
And Geneva is also the number two gateway to Switzerland. Of course, it's a very busy and very important airport, as you say, Laurie, because of all the international traffic, the UN and all of these international groups. But also just for ordinary visitors, for tourists to Switzerland, Geneva is a very convenient airport to come into.
That's right. Well, the airport in Geneva has been slightly controversial lately because, as you probably know, it borders directly between Geneva and France.
They had to actually negotiate a piece of French territory to complete the runway extension some years ago, I understand.
That's right, and it didn't go over too well with the French, I have to say. But most recently what's happened is that they've decided they have to cut down a huge forest of trees on the French part of the territory to the extent that squatters actually took root in the trees and refused to move because they didn't want it to happen. So it's true what you say. Geneva is a gateway. France and Switzerland live harmoniously mostly, but that airport sometimes is a point of friction.
Yeah, that's where it rubs together. But just to take you up on living in France, a lot of people do actually choose to live across the border in France, and you go back and forth to work across international borders like nothing. I also think of one of the most important scientific establishments in the world, that's CERN, the European Center for Particle Research and High Energy Physics, which actually is literally on the border. Part of it is in France, underground, and part of it is in Switzerland. This is the reality of life in this very, very interesting, unique Swiss city.
I would say that I, on an average, go back and forth between France and Switzerland 30 times a week. I do grocery shop. I might go buy my bread in France and my meat in Switzerland. And
the shopping is cheaper there, isn't it, on the French side?
Well, it used to be, but with the euro these days.
So the margin is less than it used to be.
The margin is less, although there is still a little bit of Swiss protectionism around it. Dairy products, but in general it's the same.
Yeah. Laurie, with all this internationalism, and it's very exciting, I think anyone can sense the excitement just talking about it here, and just sitting at Lakeside, looking at all these people here, the jet d'eau, the different languages going by is exciting, but does this mean there's really no genuine, original Geneva culture? Are there really even real Genevois left?
Well, if you ask a real Genevois, they would probably tell you that underpinning all of this international is the true Geneva spirit. And it is manifested several times a year. You can really see the Genevois come out. There's the Jeune Genevois. It's the festival once a year to commemorate the fact that when the French attacked Geneva, the Genevans responded by pouring hot soup on the heads of the attackers.
Oh, yeah, the story of Mother Royaume, who heard them coming and poured the soup on and alerted the city to their invasion.
There's a tremendous wave of almost frenetic Geneva nationalism, if you want to call it that, at least once a year where the town people dress up in their traditional costumes and they take to the streets waving banners and pounding on drums. And the real spirit of Geneva comes alive, and there's a big bonfire in the middle of the old town. And it is interesting to note, though, that it's not just the real Genevois who are dressed up, but also a lot of the foreigners who really want to partake in this interesting time.
A couple of names certainly immediately associated with the Red Cross movement, which was founded here in Geneva by Henri Dunant. And then, of course, there's John Calvin. In fact, his church is right next to the Cornavin. This is the one place in Switzerland where the railroad station has its own name. It's referred to as the Cornavin. That's the little area, but people take, we're going down to the Cornavin, and Calvin's church is just a few steps away.
That's right, and as you mentioned before, Henri Dunant, who is the founder of the International Committee of the Red Cross, is a very respected and revered member, former member, if you want, of Genevois Society, and all along Geneva you can find institutions called the Dunant Center, the Dunant Street. So Geneva has really... produced some great figures in Swiss history, and the Genevois themselves are extremely proud of this and commemorated.
That international tradition goes back generations. It didn't only start with the UN. The tradition was there. It was probably that tradition which brought the UN here in the first place.
Probably, although many people think it was the fact that the League of Nations was meant to be established here in Geneva.
That was the forerunner.
It was the forerunner, and of course, we're just looking across the lake, Bob. You can see where... The World Trade Organization is now based, was the former League of Nations building, and right on the lake there. And, of course, that was the movement of the Americans never joined the League of Nations and all sort of faltered, but nevertheless became the birthplace of the idea of internationalism. And then, of course, that led to the United Nations.
So, and they had a firm foothold here in Geneva, and it stuck. What is there to see and do here? I'm thinking of attractions. What is dining like? I know this city of Geneva has some fantastic restaurants. They're so good that it's well known. Even the French choose to come to Geneva to eat.
If they can afford it, I have to ask.
Yeah, we have to say it's not a cheap city.
No, it's true.
But there are bargain places, too. I mean,
sure,
let's face it.
And in any case, it's good to splurge every once in a while for delicious Geneva meal. And if you want to know what there is to do and see in Geneva, I think we're sitting right in front of it. The lake here is fabulous. All around us, there's sailboats, but there's swimming here as well. And in terms of cuisine, nothing beats the filet de perche, as they call it in French, perch fish. I mean, it's absolutely...
You're from the lake?
From the lake. And there's other types of fish from the lake as well that are cooked fresh, absolutely fresh from the lake. You still have fishing boats that go out and provide the fish very, very fresh. So that is one thing, the filet de perche. Now, fondue as well.
Yeah, and people eat it all year round here. The German Swiss tend to prefer it in the colder period.
That's right.
If you feel like a fondue, you see people in the middle of summer eating it.
They don't care. That's right. So the cheese here is really an important part of the cuisine. And the other big element that one mustn't forget are the white wines.
I wasn't going to let you forget that. As a wine lover, I had two of them, white and red. I mean, the Perlon, made of the Chasselas grape, is the big white one.
Yep.
And, of course, the Gamay, which is the main grape used in Burgundy for the Beaujolais. That's the house wine here, too, isn't it,
in
the red section?
And it's a light wine. It's not one of the heavy wines.
Doesn't knock you out.
No. And it's complementary to the food of this region, which tends to be a little bit rich, you know, filet de perche, sautéed. And
the sauces are rich.
That's right, and almonds.
And they tend to be fried, too, very often, or... I guess that's one of the lake steamers.
That's right.
Just ready to leave.
Still take a boat. You can catch the boat here in Geneva. You can have a delicious lunch, by the way, on these boats, served really in a very classical style. It'll take you right up to Ivoire on the French side. It'll cross over, go to Morges, and up to Lausanne. It's a wonderful...
You spend hours on that boat.
It's about a four-hour excursion, but it's really beautiful. You don't see scenery like this anywhere else in the world.
You're absolutely right, because especially from the perspective, we have to say north of here, or northeast of here, towards Lausanne, there are the tremendous vineyards, beautiful, gorgeous vineyards, and they are impressive just in the car or in the train, but when you see them from the lake, that's really the way you capture the perspective of those vineyards. There is literally, as you say, Laurie, there is no perspective like it. It's the only way to see it. What are one or two we could call insider tips about Geneva, places that not a lot of people know about, the hidden, the other Geneva? I think of the old town, not too far away, just on a little bit of a hill, almost a bit San Franciscan, isn't it? There's a little hill up there, and that's the center of the old town. What are one or two insider things to do?
Well, the crypts underneath the cathedral there are absolutely fascinating. And who would have thought that in the middle of the old town in Geneva, you can go and bury yourself way down under the church and find the ancient history of the Geneva spiritual life. And the crypts there are really worthwhile seeing. you can also climb up to the top. So you can either go up or down, but within the old cathedral in Geneva, there's a whole wealth of history to really take a look at. So that's one thing. The other thing I would say is let's move a little bit outside of Geneva and go to a rather special corner known as Car Rouge.
I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
Well, Car Rouge for many people seems like a step into Italy. And in fact, there are some Italian architectural origins there as well. And that is a really thriving area of Geneva, lots of fabulous restaurants, dinners, but cabarets as well, and wonderful boutiques and shops, and a real sense of a piazzas type of life. And you go there on a Saturday, and there's open markets, and there's the old churches, and you have a sense of almost being in Naples or Rome, but you're in the middle of Switzerland.
It also has a reputation for its artists, and it would be something between Geneva's Soho and Greenwich Village in New York. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's one of the really fun things about Car Rouge is that there are many little shops along the way with artist boutiques, but also hat makers, fashion designers, and they all have a little stall there, and it's very creative, very alive, very colorful. And sometimes Geneva can be slightly staid. So if you really want to get out there and see some life, you should head off to Car Rouge.
I have to ask you a personal question, finally, Laurie Heber. Despite your international background, you speak the languages, you have made it abundantly clear that you feel very much at home in Geneva. You have children here, your husband is local from this part of French-speaking Switzerland. Obviously, you do feel very much at home here, but do you ever get homesick for Chicagoland?
Well, I haven't lived in Chicago for over 20 years, so I have to say, I'm not so sure I get homesick for Chicago, because I certainly miss the Americans, but there are enough of those co-nationals here and living in the same town as on the same street as me that we tend to get together for Thanksgiving, for the 4th of July, for Christmas. So there's so much of America here.
There's even a lady who makes New York bagels.
That's right. Bagels and brownies and American beer, everything you could find. There's American stores here. So, yeah, of course, one misses one's home. But it's usually the people that one misses the most. And so when you do live in an international city such as Geneva, you're never too far from home.
I'll leave the last word to you, Laurie, at least in the sense of giving you a chance to say anything that I may have forgotten to ask or you are really dying to bring up before we say goodbye.
I guess the only thing that I would really like to emphasize is that on a clear day in Geneva, when you see the Alps surrounding the lake, and on the one side, and the Jura Mountains, which are lower and they're slightly flatter, maybe not as majestic, you really feel almost cradled here because Geneva is at the edge of Switzerland. It's at the very bottom of Switzerland, and the lake is right in the middle, and it's a very comforting feeling. I have to say, one feels very safe and at home in Geneva, and that's a really comforting place to go for these people who do travel all over the world. I think that's the one thing that they feel happiest about, is that when they come back to Geneva, they know that things are going to be safe and calm and tranquil, and that's very comforting to a lot of people. And I have to say that that's one reason why we won't leave Geneva. We may go off to Afghanistan, to Liberia, and all these places, but we always come home to Geneva.
It's a place to look forward to coming back to. It's been some time since I was down here myself, and it's a nice feeling to be in Geneva. There's a different air, and it illustrates again how diverse Switzerland is. This is a country of multi-cultures, multi-languages, and you can have even a different feeling, a different sense of culture by just going from one part of the country to the other. Here, this is about as French as you can imagine. This is the lifestyle here. As you said before, Laurie, people go back and forth. The French come here. The French Swiss go across the border. It's international. You can use English. You can use probably Turkish. You can use Uzbekistani or whatever language you want. You'll find somebody here who speaks it. You have sold Geneva very, very well indeed. Anyone can tell your enthusiasm for it. Laurie Heber, a former colleague and a good friend. She's a long-term resident of Geneva, and from what we hear, she doesn't have plans to leave, not for a long time. From Geneva, Switzerland's westernmost city and small canton of the same name, for Switzerland in Sound, in view of the jet d'eau, that water that you'll see here on the website, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.